Blog Talk Radio.
The fields are planted here, but they won't grow. We won't have to say goodbye, they will all go. Maybe things will be better in Chicago. Leave all we've ever known for a place we've never seen. Maybe things will be better in Chicago. But it's braver to stay, even braver to go. Wherever she goes, I go. Maybe things will be better in Chicago.
Chicago. Anyways, so this is your mother's medicine cabinet, brought to you by the Literary Underground and all 800,000 of them. They multiply like rabbits on a daily basis. So we'll just get into it. 781, that's either going to be our guest, Aaron Reardon, or Papa Gino's with my pizza. Hello?
Frank, I'm a little disappointed that my opening credits was not Wasted Rock Ranger by Great White. I'm really disappointed,
Sorry, I did not run out to the store to buy a Great White album so I could
download
it.
All right, well,
you know,
it's fine. Conway's works, I suppose, you know, whatever you have
to do. Yeah, I wasn't about to spend a dollar on, you know, to download that song.
Well, yeah, I mean, considering Great White isn't really worth a nickel, let alone a dollar, I don't really say I blame you.
So how is it going in the recesses of Cape Ann?
Oh, over in the armpit of Massachusetts over here, it's, you know, it's nice. It's a nice night. We got some swimming going on. I've been drinking since about 2 o'clock this afternoon, you know.
Right, what should you do on your day off?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and Michael would like to add, all right, in his best Matthew McConaughey.
All right. Ask him if he's going to get Aerosmith tickets.
He asked you if he's going to, he wants to know if you're going to go get Aerosmith tickets. I'm not going to give you his response.
No, well, you know, that's a line from Dazed and Confused with Matthew McConaughey.
I know it is. Anyways, moving on.
Yeah. So what's going on? Like, what kind of beverages are you consuming this evening?
Oh, we're just hanging out with a whole shitload of PBR right about now.
Oh.
That's pretty much it.
Is PBR getting expensive in Massachusetts these days?
Everything is getting expensive in Massachusetts these days, but PBR is still cheaper than Bud Light, and it still tastes better, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, Bud Light's not a beer that any human being should ever drink at any time.
Well, Bud Light is the official beer of Lynn, Massachusetts, so, you know, I shouldn't say anything too harsh against it, but...
You mean,
yeah,
like Bud
I
Light?
Vehemently.
When I think of Massachusetts, when I think of Lynn, Massachusetts, I think of Bud Light, Marlboro Light, cocaine and Adam Sandler.
and maybe possibly natural ice as well.
I had natural ice the other day.
Oh, okay, so that's limb. Why we weren't mentioning that one. I'm sorry, Frank. I didn't mean to call you out there.
So, are you poolside as we speak? Are you poolside at the moment?
I am totally poolside right now. I am. It's not as glamorous as it sounds, but, you know, I am.
I've swam in your pool before. It's definitely, your pool is in the shape, of, it does say ER, your pool. Don't let anybody fool, don't try to fool anybody.
It does, and actually, every night at approximately midnight, a whole bunch of fireworks go off in the air, and they say Frenchie right above the pool. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing what being a celebrity like myself will give you.
You
Fantastic.
Are America's first Lynn celebrity, perhaps, next to Kelly Savalas.
There's Mary Baker Eddy, founder of Christian Science, and there is Freddie Boom Boom Cannon. There is no other celebrities from Lynn, Massachusetts, except for me.
Is Kelly Savalas not from Lynn, Massachusetts?
Well, Kelly Savalas is not from Lynn, but he's from near here.
Oh.
So I guess he counts. Who's looking at you, baby?
All right, so before these ratings skyrocket through the roof, why don't you drop them and
Just
give us a
they
poem?
They already have. What don't I want?
Give us a poem, drunk girl.
All right. Well, I'm gonna start with a poem that I actually posted on your page and neglected to erase before tonight, but I figured it would be a good little icebreaker, and I'll read it really quickly, and then we can get back to ragging on each other mercilessly if that's all right with you.
Okay.
Okay. Holding Caulfield close to my letterbox, my chest hopes for one murmuring palpitation against my eerie waves of somber, ingrained, a migraine worker, dull and void in the grandiose scheme. Can't you see you're staining me with your fear of in-con perception? I'm apologizing for worms who surface too early to eat the birds that prey, for my overtly sensitive disabilities. That doesn't mean that tears don't tear or that chairs don't come and go as they please. An aura, face, to be needled and threaded, emasculated, but never the way that I did. Taking flame to a flicker, obscure scene niceties, I tune her torture, then let her fade to grace. Soon, mommy, a splash will save the date. The tides are marching, washing us all over. In God, we combust. A lone lioness will wail, just as she always has.
Hmm. So why don't you tell all the listeners that might not know who the fuck you are, where does your poems come from? Do you have do they just come out of, you just rack them out of your head, or do like things happen in your daily life?
Well, I don't know how to say it except for that it's kind of a combination of those things. It's definitely partly what happens in my daily life, but mostly it is the kind of verbal diarrhea that spews out of my head. And, you know, sometimes I like the way that certain words sound together. And, you know, sometimes it takes me 3 seconds to put a poem together, and sometimes it takes me like 3 months to put a poem together. It's just kind of like, you know, certain words sound okay together, and then a certain thing will happen. And I've never really been good at explaining where any of my stuff comes from. It comes from somewhere, but it's pretty much the only thing that I can say is that it comes from a definite, like, honest place all the time. It's just, you know, it is what it is.
So you're not writing Twilight stories for us at any time?
No, I'm not going to be writing the sequel to Fifty Shades of Grey at any time soon, but, you know, honestly, if somebody offered me enough money, I bet I fucking could.
Anything to get you out of Dungeon Rock air town.
Seriously, man. Like I could write the Lynn, Massachusetts version of 50 Shades of Grey, and instead of being all like S&M and stuff, it would just be like, you know, a crack whore or a pimp and, you know, a love story. But you know
yeah, but you would have to add you would have to add things from Wyoma Square in there, such as, like, the Four Winds.
What, like Saucy's Pizza?
Yeah. I mean, those were the days when we were, like, younger, though. We were, like, smoking joints and taking pills and chucking snowballs inside the door.
Oh, we did that when we were younger? We don't do that now?
I don't smoke joints anymore. You know this.
Oh, well,
you're the one
I do.
Never...
Sorry, does that incriminate me somehow?
No, dude, I don't care. You could go do a line of coke off Mike's ass if you want. I mean, it's all up to you.
As long as right afterwards he does his Matthew McConaughey impression and says, all right, because otherwise it's just not worth doing.
When you do his Matthew McConaughey, all right, you sound more like Quagmire.
Giggity.
I would like to notify the listeners that if you do want to call in and ask Drunk Aaron a question, it's not even the writer Aaron Reardon or my cousin Aaron Reardon. It's just I didn't have a guest tonight, so I have this person called Drunk Reardon or Drunk Aaron.
Oh,
on the
you
phone.
Son of a bitch. I miss
you're
too,
like my,
Ray.
You're kind of like my Baba Booey, I guess, on the Howard Stern show.
Wow. I mean, in a sense, that's kind of a compliment since he's, like, more valuable than Stern is most of the time. But, you know, I like to think that that means I'm full of pop culture knowledge that you're not. But, yeah, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I just...
Thanks for that.
I don't know, it's nice to have a, once in a while, a nice humorous guest upon. Once in a while, it's nice to have them because normally it's both serious. So I'm going to get the one serious question out of the way, and then we can, like, hijinx it for the remaining 30 minutes. But the one question I ask everybody, do you think the internet is more of a downer or upper for the writing community? Does it, like, foster too many... I don't know, too much bad writing, and since it's a kind of a world that needs instant gratification, do you think it's like ruining writing at all, or do you think it helps?
You just get right into it, don't you? I don't know. For me personally, like I share my work and I try to get my shit published, you know, wherever. And the internet has definitely been an invaluable tool as far as that is concerned. And I think that it really does get a lot of small press out there and it really does get a lot more attention paid. But the issue that I have with it is that it always seems to be like the same couple of hundred people. And it's sort of like everybody in a giant circle jerk. And I don't mean to like offend anybody when I say that, but it seems to be kind of a giant circle jerk where we're all only sharing our work with each other. But there are instances from, you know, now and then that we're actually able to branch out a little bit more because we do show, you know, I think a lot of people that are, you know, online, on Facebook, on fucking whatever, do show a lot of solidarity and get together when they really need to, like especially for the events that we've had all over the country with a bunch of people reading together and stuff like that. I think it's fantastic in that sense. I don't think it gets a lot. It gets some books sold, but doesn't get a hell of a lot of books sold. But I do think that it definitely brings us together. So my leaning is more towards the positive than the negative as far as that goes.
Okay, we have a caller. A caller for you is on air. I don't know who it is.
Oh, my.
410 area code. You are on with Aaron.
Excuse me, hello, and listen. This is Vera, V capital E-R-A, and don't you forget it, sweetheart. Aaron, I have a question for you.
Yes, Vera.
I love your stuff. It is absolutely amazing.
You are absolutely amazing.
Beautiful. What I'm wondering is, when you know that the aliens are coming, why don't you run for your life? The motherlode is about to land on the hot causeway.
Vera, I'm not exactly afraid of the aliens, though. You know, I kind of welcome them. I'm kind of like, hey, maybe one of these assholes will buy my book, since nobody on the internet does.
Well, I'll say that's very poetic of you. But I will say that if you were smart, you would run for your life.
Oh, well, I think you should get a lot who eats cake. Thank you, Vera.
I do think that you have amazing work. I have followed your work for many years now. Many years now.
I know you have. I think I have a restraining order. I'm pretty sure I have a restraining order on you.
I wear all purple, including my eyeshadow, but I love your work.
I can't seem to get my door shut.
I just want to say, run for your life, because the mother load is about to land on Manhattan Causeway. Run for your lives.
Vera, I am pretty sure we are all grateful for your warning. I think you've changed my life tonight.
Run for your lives. The aliens are coming. Run for your lives. The mother load has landed.
You changed my life, Vera. Thank you. That was Vera, V capital ERA. Didn't you hear her?
I don't know. Was that like drunk Humphrey Bogart in a tranny bar?
No. No, I think it was more like a drunk Rue McClanahan than a drunk Humphrey Bogart. She really listened to it. Jesus, don't you appreciate art, Frank?
Sorry. Sorry, man. Sorry, man. Sorry. All right, why don't you give us another poem?
All right, well, you know, because we were just talking about Lynn, Massachusetts, I'm going to give you my my Lynn, Massachusetts, if I were Chatham Street hooker poem, if that's all right with you.
Okay.
All right. Linda LaDouche would be the hooker name I'd choose, because douche always makes me laugh. And were I a whore, I'd probably have a stinky snatch, so it would be kind of ironic, too. I wear cut-off acid-washed jeans like the other ladies of Chatham Street many a night in the Hotel Edison until they tore it down and rebuilt it, trying to convey an image like a bunch of crack whores don't live there. I wear T-shirts that say tacky shit like, you can't afford me, or baby girl, $5, you holla. I keep my spare sweatpants that say cum dumpster and faded gold across the ass in a plastic Stop and Shop bag along with my cigarettes and industrial-sized box of condoms. I wouldn't try to fool anybody. I wear my tramp stamp like a medallion, like it was my armor or my cape. I'm off to save the world with a damaged vagina. Zoom. I'd have a few teeth knocked out so I could fit in better with the other Chatham Street girls, all the better for the blowjobs. I'm sure those mouths get tired, slurping away for welfare baby's peanut butter. I grow hair from every mole on my face, shoot up heroin in Union Street alleys, pass out in a pool of vomit in some seedy apartment above the discotheque. Yes, there really is one above the laundromat. I listen to Journey on my cassette player Walkman, step wisely in my cornflower blue sweater from one John's car to the next. On slow nights, drink at Cronin's, catch a knifing down at Smug's, sniff a few rails off the bar. But I could never be a crack whore, and my name's not Linda LaDouche. I'm far too clever, far too pretty. And besides, and right here I do three snaps in a Z formation, you can't afford me. So there you go.
what is your take on acid wash cutoffs?
My take on acid wash cutoffs is that unless you live in a trailer park or you're a crack whore, they're unacceptable. But if you're Frank, it's okay. That's what Mike told me.
Yeah, I heard that you were cleaning up the Union Street area. Is this true?
All right. Well, I laugh heartily. Like, yeah, I suppose it is. But really, as long as they have a welfare office and a fucking methadone clinic on the same street, how clean do you think it's gonna get?
I'm gonna dwell into the past a little bit here, and do you recall that time that you know, when we were living in Somerville and we were roommates and, you know, and then Mark Bergami or whatever his name was, you know, he screwed us out of rent money, so we had to move out of there and stay in your mom's basement for a while. Do you remember having to go to Union Street to the job place. Do you remember that?
I didn't have to.
You went with me, man, on the bus.
I did? Holy shit, I don't even remember that.
Well, probably because you drank a 40 of King Cobra prior.
Well, I remember drinking the 40s of King Cobra and ripping the fucking mattress off of his floor and changing the locks and kicking his ass out while he begged us to let us back in by slipping like $10 under the door or whatever the fuck it was that he did.
I've got he says I've got $18 and he owed like $7.
I've got $18. I'll pay you the rest of the rent tomorrow. Just let me in. No, dude. Go fuck yourself. I'm going to sell your PlayStation and throw your clothes away. How do you like that?
or
assholes, yeah.
Or the time that you were tossed from the Four Winds.
And I wasn't even drunk yet.
I don't even think you had a drink yet.
I didn't.
You were just
I asked for a drink and they tossed me out, but they were like, "You can stay." I was like, "Wow, assholes. All right." Apparently fucking Slutty McSlutty Pants, the bartender, had a crush on you or something.
I
was a threat, even though we're related.
I think I was wearing my acid wash cutoffs with the pleats that day.
I'm pretty sure you were. You were wearing your acid wash cutoffs and your hypercolor T-shirt. Totally.
He
was like, "Can I put
caller.
My hand against it so that I see it change color?" And you were like, "Okay."
We've got another caller from your area code.
Oh, my.
You're live with Erin.
Hi, this is Misty. I'm a Chatham Street whore, and I don't appreciate people talking shit about me when I'm just making myself a living.
Is this Linda? Linda, who walks around Boston Street with the plastic bags? With the headphones on. Oh, my God, you're my
hero.
How
did you know my name? How did you know my name?
Because everybody knows Linda. If you're from the armpit of Massachusetts, you know who the fuck Linda is. Anyway, Frank.
Did you know that I put lipstick on my cheeks as rouge? You're very mean. You're all very mean.
We got rid of her.
We
got rid of her. She hung up, I guess, so we got rid of her. So,
okay.
Erin, now we have another serious question. I have to ask the serious questions once in a while. Tell the listeners about any books that you might have and where they can acquire these.
Well, I have one chapbook called Meat that is somewhat old but still very near and dear to my heart. And you know, you can email me at tigerlilymoon@gmail.com, and I'm willing to if you don't want to pay for one, I'm willing to do a trade. If you have a book, I'm willing to trade you a copy for a copy, because I think that's like the best trade in the world, is to get writing when you give writing. And I also have another chapbook called The Tightrope, which is available at Covert Press. If you contact Covert Press or Mike Grover, you should be able to easily obtain a copy. And I have some stuff in the works with Unadorned Press. I have a few unofficial chapbooks that I never really released anywhere. So if you want to get in touch with me and find out about those, you can. But, you know, I got some stuff in the works with as far as Unadorned is concerned. But other than that, right now I don't have anything brand new that's completely ready yet. But if you get in touch with me, I can totally work something out. And, you know, if you want to obtain any of my writing for any reason whatsoever, I can work out something with you.
Or you could call her business manager, Linda.
Yes, you could call Linda, who you just heard from a few minutes ago, who uses her lipstick as rouge. I don't know if you heard that, but she does.
So why don't you give us another poem?
All right. I'm going to read you like a little snippet of something and then a poem immediately afterwards.
Okay.
Epistle of 69, Hymns, A Death Day Fidelity, Book of Anais Nin and Her Band of Diary Strumpets. I'm not really sure what it says about me as a person, but I can stand such a cavernous moral high ground about so much, but I'm the quickest to stink, to slink into the grease pits and gutters with playful banter and bruises to show. Certainly this is a mental condition of sorts. It's hard trying to control the vibration that seems to hang in the balance of the air and the universe between us whenever we speak. Electrodes and such circuitry fucketry. But I have a feeling it's pertinent somehow. I know what is real and what is merely a moist reverie. I know where my heart is deeply rooted and where my body goes to vivify itself. I do. I was just kind of hoping I could have my Hugo and Henry Miller, too. And then this poem is called Fidelity. Understanding is when you find a man who doesn't look at you sideways. When you tell him you feel more like yourself than you have since you got back together, he trusts without fail and takes no offense, even when he should somehow. You've been in a vortex where there were no words, no books, no music, no sex, where all that was once so limitless became the exact opposite of what you fell in love with each other for. We've been missing our legendary rooftop shout-outs, how invincible we were. Chinatown, 2 a.m., you started fights with strangers, and he gladly took the punches. I guess this is what they call an epiphany. In all the years you've shared a home, he never saw you make love to a typewriter. He never saw the remnants of a creamy wordgasm behind drunk purple lids of your eyes. A 3-day bender where all you could do was type, fuck, come, and cry. Pumping truth and personal wisdom, a benzodrine tiger lily. And you're manic, yeah, maybe that's the wine or the atmospheric pressure tonight, popping off inside you like a Tommy gun. The poet is still alive, she survives. Tonight it's all about you, not the grieving sister weeping mudflowers, not the oxymoronic doting and cunning wife, not the daughter who tries too hard to be a picture of perfection, not the friend whose ear is bent into origami cranes, but you and he, frantic and glorious, artist pumping blood and batshit crazy. There's so much love here that the earth is fucking shaking. In your head somewhere, you knew that your lunacy was more genuine than prophets who write with the prettiest pens. A break in the air, sweet, smoky, cloudy, spasmodic air, air that never stops traveling, air that is forever transmogrifying, sucked in and out and in and out and in and out into infinity, air that knows more than we will ever know in 10 pathetic human lifespans, from the beginning of time until whenever it stops, if it stops. He gives you a grin to check that you're still in there, proud in his way of the cracked calamity that is you. This makes you sad for you, but glad for him. You, who are so outwardly needy and inwardly sullen. He, who is so outwardly kind and quietly masochistic. Your insecurities have melded together, and thus your hearts became conjoined twins. And tangentially, you start thinking that's probably how every couple gets drawn together, that and fear of not doing what is next expected. Or flurried juices that create newer, you hope, better versions of yourself. This escalates and becomes a question of whether or not you were lying to him or to you when you told him you'd have his babies. Because really, you're not afraid. You're afraid not of complete physical deformity, disease, and every hypochondriac's wet dreams, but of how much of the population you found reasons to resent and even hate. And how could their offspring not be extensions of those fucking assholes? And do I really want my kid to be the one who shits his pants in the lunch line, getting beat up and beat down and made to feel less valid than the valedictorian for appearance's sake for the motherfucking PTA? Or that one day he'll be choking on a suit and tie when the automatons finally finish taking over? This I cannot abide. I fucked myself up. I won't fuck you up the way I know I'm fucking him up. I really hope I'm not fucking him up. Please let my wishes for his understanding keep him from becoming what I am. Shake it off a minute, you glittering cage fighter. I know you're eager to get back in the ring. It's been so long since you were back in the fucking ring. Challenges surpassed, mountains surmounted, resentments tucked in like miscreant stepchildren. It's getting quiet, so quiet but so violent. And there he is after the cyclone stops, when all the broken glass and dust have settled, with a brazen fuck off to those who didn't know us from Shinola, who judged and said we were too bipolar to make sense. There he is, arms outstretched, kissing your sweaty forehead, faithful, too faithful.
That was a nice flowing poem. That was a long one. What was it called again?
Fidelity.
That's
You have a good way with keeping flow going with long poems. Sometimes you hear a long poem and you're like, oh my God, I think I want to put my head in the oven. But but like, you know, there are some people that can do it, and you're one of them. But you got another caller. Let's see who this is.
Thank you. Awesome.
Caller, you're on with Aaron.
Aaron, Fidelity was one of the most amazing pieces that I have heard in my entire life. Oh my God.
Thank you.
I just want to let you know that. Like, it really touched me. It really touched me in such a way.
I appreciate you.
Wow. Yeah.
I you know, right now I'm touching you.
You're touching me. I'm in my bed, too.
I love you from the inch of the camera to the inch of the cheese on your
to
thigh.
To the inch of the cheese on my thigh.
Yes.
But oh my God, Fidelity was so amazing. It was like, do you remember one of the first poems that you ever sent to me, and I told you that it reminded me of Kristen Hirsch?
You know, I really like to think that it's my tour de France as far as my poems go.
It is. And seriously, and you honestly performed it. Like you said it in such an amazing, powerful way. I don't know. I'm verklempt. I really am. I think
you did
an amazing job, and I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. You're amazing, too.
I love you, hon.
I love you, too.
Hello.
Frank,
anyone...
are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I didn't know if there was any more to be said from the caller.
No, I think we're through verbally making out with each other. Thank you.
So, so we're down to like 12 minutes in the show. So, why don't you take it away and say something?
Try what? Do you want me to read something else, or like, what's the deal with that?
I just want you to start discussing what you bought today at the store. And yeah, read something else.
All right, then. All right. Gristle 15, Screw, the Book of Elijah's Wood, Polishing Halos Made of Hallelujahs. I promise I'll repent tomorrow, lather, rinse, repeat. I learned from the best how to repress, deny. Guilt comes with a free continental breakfast, endless refills of shitty work coffee. He kisses until I'm sore, until I'm flushed, white as a fish. How lucky he is for how happy I've made him. It's like he knows just where the salt lick hangs and just where and when to rub it in. My face, my fangs, my pangs. Quick, somebody peel a blood orange. I need sweet acid to kill that copper taste. I took this basket full of hallelujah and hosannas. I weaved them into something resembling a crown, a halo, and then I spit-shined it the way I used to spit-shine his holy, holy. When we were ravenous for each other like teenagers, when there were no words such as I can't, I still don't think I quite learned how not to be so damned unselfish, giving up trade secrets for being so easily impressed and moved. Maybe they're just wounds of adolescent gray insecurity that make waking up normal a complete impossibility. The thoughts take turns raising each other from saccharine to morose, lickety-split. He puts his whole face into the font. I just keep weaving and chewing on rosary stones. Someday the prophet prince will come, and the oceans will all boil over, leaving me with cuts on my knees as alone as I ever needed to be. Realistically, this coupling should never have happened. And then that goes into a poem called The Greatest Love Song Ever Sung. Subtle coquetry belies your true ravenous nature, and the synchronized patter of fawning palpitations create poses only a painter dares to dream. Softer than December's brooding sky, a touch that makes angels tremble and devils cry. What used to be the start of ominous biblical verse gave birth to sturdy artistic renderings of death in all its romantic semantics. This is how I found purpose in the milky white beyond your skies. Too afraid to stray from majestic isolation, this was my attraction to bear. I knew the nuances of your spirit, the gentle ways that you gave penance to every heart that inched a little too close, a little too lifelike. For it was you, it was always you, the other side of Gemini. This rose, by any other name, would prick my fingers, water my eyes, leaving shallow lagoons to salivate, humiliate, simulate the greatest love song ever sung.
So how do these go together?
I just, you know, they were written like years apart from each other, but I just think they kind of work.
Okay.
I know.
Sometimes
you know, I'm not really.
As that.
Yeah, I'm not really good at this whole, like, intellectual bullshitism of, like, trying to, like, be like, oh, no, you don't understand. Because I said one word in stanza seven, and, yeah, no. I don't know how to do that.
I'm not asking you to do that. If you listen to any of the shows at ever, at any time, you would know
Honey,
that I've never asked anybody that question.
By the way,
world seven... In stanza five of your poems on page 65, what did you mean by using the word and instead of it?
If you'll excuse me for a moment, we have somebody from the New Yorker calling in right now. No.
It reminds
me
of those
days.
I have
one more if you want to hear it.
Hold on, man. We'll get to it. There's still 10 minutes or so left.
All right. Jesus, goddamn Christ, you know?
Did you just say Jesus Gigantic Christ?
No, I said Tap Dancing Christ, but Jesus Gigantic Christ might be my new thing that I say.
I just picture this giant buddy Christ looking over the top of your screen porch in the back.
With a quagmire chin.
Yeah.
Hanging over everybody.
Oh, wow.
I miss you,
just
cousin.
Like those, yeah. What are we? Are we Amish? I miss you, cousin.
No, but I thought we were in a gang together back in the day.
Oh, we apparently, you're quite popular tonight because there's another caller from your area.
Awesome.
Code. Let's see. All right. You're live with Aaron.
Hello, this is Nigel, calling from the New Yorker.
Does your chin extend, does it stick further out than your top teeth? Otherwise, I don't want to talk to you.
It's quite further than Cameron, the son of Celeste.
Frank and Leto.
I have a quite extended chin, yes.
Right. So what's your question, Frank and Leto?
All right. Thanks for calling, Nigel. We are down to 7 minutes exactly. And this show has turned into the comedy 45 minutes, which is quite fine.
I know.
Because,
I'm sorry. It's a farce. It's not
no,
my fault.
No, it's completely fine because a lot of the shows are like a lot of times serious, and once in a while there tends to be a comical show, which kind of is nice once in a while. I didn't think the show would be too serious anyways.
If anything, I really hope I could make a couple of people laugh tonight. That would be cool.
Or Nigel, who took about,
Vera.
You know, who talks like that, who seemed to talk like Mr. Bottom Tooth, and he took about 45 minutes to get a word out.
Leave Nigel alone. I'm sure he's a good person.
I'm sure Nigel will be giving you a shoulder massage to the sounds of Bryan Adams later.
Ooh. That would be awesome. Unfortunately, Nigel doesn't live in the same state as me.
But otherwise, we'd be
rocking out to the summer of 69 with fucking Bryan Adams, because you know Bryan Adams will be over here in the next couple of days.
If only Bryan Adams could have called in tonight.
That would have been brilliant. He would have been like, hi,
Brian.
My name is Sean Mull, and we'd be like, that's like a knife.
Sean Mullen could explain his Bryan Adams-ness
or Adams-ish or whatever you would say to us.
I'm pretty sure it can't be explained unless somebody looks at a picture of them side by side and then makes their own assessment. That's the only time it ever works.
To the day he dies, he will, or even when he dies, he'll be walking around with no shirt on. Even in the middle of the winter, he just got no shirt on.
This is the first time
like
I ever
knife.
Saw you with a shirt on.
It was at your cousin's wedding. It was the first time I ever saw Brian Adams with a shirt on.
And he was pissed off at you for like months afterwards. And I was like, dude, I was just telling the truth, man. You never have a shirt on. Anyway.
All
right. So all the people that don't know us are loving this conversation.
So we're down to under 5 minutes, so why don't you give us that other poem?
I'll give one more poem, I suppose. It's called A Snail, A Slug. Inching along, a snail, I feel sluggish in 2 steps from death's tea time patio. Gravid weight, I'm juggling boulders, sandstone of pyramid building proportion, wondering when we'll rise up from hell, chewing marigold, knuckle joints taut, tender, clicking. How do you push back the pulsing wrath of rapture? I don't want to be the strongest girl on the talk show circuit, strongest in the world. I don't have the right look, the ability to lie to a camera, make love to an eager and ignorant studio audience. This takes a tenacity I wasn't built with. See me, I'm frozen. I wanted to raise horses with him on a farm in Missouri. Pretend I was a 15-gallon Texan with bullhorns, beautiful, grass-fed, pendulous breasts that clacked together like a Newton's cradle of stability, teeth cut from a milk carton and a clean bill of health. Robust in ways I shouldn't be, I asked you to bury me at his knees so his concern and love would have that slow trickle-down effect, like a snail, a slug, a bedbug drowning in melted icicles. How can I explain this paralysis when I'm 3 days down off my hummingbird trip and he can't peel me from the cracks of our musty concrete foundation, a bastille with iron bars unseen and archangel guardians, words and fingers sharp and virulent as rusted nails, lately not knowing if this wave will break over 3 minutes or years from our last perfect moment, if I'll ever be myself again, whoever she was. I don't want to jump on your lousy prescription drug plan, where I sacrifice creativity for a platypus baby with cleft palate, or worse, a snail, a slug, a bedbug that wears my face and never stops wailing. Should I be tethered to this one heart, not his, but that of my mother, too forgiving, too relaxed in denial, with funeral pipes unremitting and a gallows behind her eye, a broken-legged Christian, burden of life and gray-capped mountains on her shoulders, solid, immovable, no matter how many palm fronds shaken in her strange hands, the demons never get tired, never age. Could he leave me now in this hourglass vortex, the blackout moments lunging, pulling me in like mercurial quicksand, nose, lungs, judgments, and contrition? And he keeps asking me why, but my tongue is dangling from the ceiling, leaving silence where should be accountability, a quiet covenant made with the sunrise that its brightness will turn me upside down as I was in birth. Its warmth and radiation will bring salt to cover the earth, dissolve the snail, the slug, the bedbug, and find me magnanimous in a fizzling blaze of glory, all dried up, nothing more to give or forgive, and the world will forget forever how I was the strongest girl who ever lived.
Okay, we do have one more question for you, and the question comes from Michelle McDaniel, Michelle with one L. Do you call me Frank, Francis, or Asshat?
Actually, none of the above. I call you Knucklebag. That is how you are programmed into my phone, and that is what I call you. You are Knucklebag. Knucklebag. The answer is Knucklebag.
Well, I would like to thank you for coming on the show. And
I thank you for having me.
All right, I'll be talking to you and seeing you and all that in the future. Tell Matthew McConaughey I said. All right, later.
I will.
That was Erin Reardon, my cousin. If you like her poetry, find her. She's got some chapbooks out there. It was good to have her on the show. It was good to have some laughs and stroll down memory lane. It was good to hear from Nigel and Matthew McConaughey or whoever else called in. And next week our show will be Hobo Camp Reviews, James Duncan. And after that will be Epic Rights writer, published writer, John Yamris. So tune in next week, same time, whatever.